Hi, and welcome to this bonus episode of the Message Podcast. I'm Sam Ward, the Director of Ministry here at The Message. This is Mates on a Mission, a special audio version of the TV show which is currently broadcasting on Message Live, on our Facebook and YouTube channels, and on message.org.uk/live. Head over there to check out all our other great programmes that we've produced to help equip you for mission. Okay, welcome everybody to Mates on a Mission. It's great to have you with us. Today we are joined by the legend that is Ian Henderson, founder and chief of Visible Ministries, possibly one of the most gifted communicators in the nation. And above all that, he is one of my favorite people on the planet. He's not just a friend of the Message Trust, he's a personal friend of mine. So it's brilliant to have you with us, Ian. How are you today?
I'm awesome, mate. They are kind words. Blimey, though, you were being very, very good to me there. Thank you.
Dude, I've got more, but it would be a bit weird if I suddenly went all sycophantic in this early moment time together. Dude, I do really value, though, so much that you bring, such a wise guy. But so tell us, Chief Executive of Visible Ministries, tell us all about Visible. What's the vision? What's your purpose? What are you here for?
Yeah, okay. So Visible is really based on some famous verses in Isaiah 40, where it talks about, and we'll know these so well because they're the same verses are used to describe John the Baptist later on in the New Testament. They've been used in great speeches, including Martin Luther King's I Had a Dream speech, use these verses. These are verses that probably will resonate with a lot of us, but it's the verses where it talks about basically making a straight path, preparing a way for the Lord, leveling mountains and lifting valleys so that the glory of the Lord can be revealed to all people. And Visible is really trying to do that. We're trying our best to remove mountains, restore valleys, and reveal Jesus. And so what we've tried to identify are, what are the mountains? What are the things in culture or in people's own lives that get in the way of Jesus being revealed? And also, what are the things that are missing? You know, a valley is like a big gap, if you like, in the ground. So, you know, what are the gaps? What are the things that are missing in culture and people's lives that need to be restored, that need to be lifted up and refilled, if you like? And so that's us, that's Visible. That's what we're trying to do. And probably the big thing that we're focused on is one particular mountain, which is pornography. And so our kind of flagship project is called Naked Truth. And we seek to open eyes and free lives from the damaging impact of pornography through Naked Truth. So that's one of the big things that we're doing.
Wow, that's epic. Yeah. And I love your knowledge of geography there, that you've just described the valley to us as a gap in the land. And that's I can tell you're well educated there. You studied geography.
Plates, somehow plates are involved. I never, maybe cups as well. I don't know.
What is unique about you though, Ian, is of all the people that I'm interviewing, you've actually worked at the Message Trust. In fact,
yeah,
I was thinking about it just the other day. The same day that you started working at the Message was the same day I started working at the Message.
Yeah, you've told me this before. Yeah, I know. That's weird, isn't it?
Like, I'm sure you remember
it well. Out with the old, in with the beard.
So tell us about your experience at the Message then. What was that time like?
I often say that in some ways, particularly the early days of me being at the Message. So we, my wife and I, Jen, we moved to Manchester from Essex in 2001 to pioneer one of the Eden projects. And we moved to a place called Harper Hay. And at the time, Harper Hay was the most deprived ward in the UK. So we kind of went into that with just not a lot of idea actually of what that would be like. And to be honest, in some ways, it was incredibly challenging. It was some of the hardest days of our lives for all sorts of reasons. But I also say this, some of the best days of our lives as well. And those years on Eden were formative and transformative for us as people, and hopefully to some extent for the community as well. So I loved that. I mean, I found it really, really hard, but I loved every minute of it. And then basically I was part of Eden and leading that team in Harper Hay for probably 6 to 7 years, something like that. Jen and I and our family, we stayed in Harper Hay, but my role changed at The Message and I became the director of missions. So I started to oversee the bands and the schools teams, the creative teams, and some of their other great stuff like Eden Bus and some of the things that were happening at the time. And was, I guess, doing mission in a completely different way to how we'd been doing it with Eden, but was, again, just all about how do we help reveal Jesus to people? How do we make that a reality in people's lives? And I was around in the days when Al Zevon were around. So we were doing all sorts of things, trying to get songs into the charts, trying to do community-based mission festivals. That was the time when we first started to explore the idea of Eden and then message hubs all around the country and then the world. So they were exciting days to be part of the leadership, part of the team, and loved every minute of it. I mean, I do just think that what The Message does, The Message is passion and heart, but actually it's practice. You know, it's not just the thing about The Message is I think people talk about The Message being full of passionate people. And it is, of course. But what I really love is it's practice. It's the way that actually gets on and does stuff, whether that's in the toughest communities or in, you know, parts of culture where Jesus is hardly ever mentioned. Yeah, so I love The Message and I really, really love my time there. So I was with The Message for about 10 years or so, I think.
Seriously? Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe a little less. I lose track. Now I'm old.
So when I talk to people who've been on Eden for a time, they often talk about them changing more than their neighborhoods did. Is that the similar kind of sentiment for you? Do you feel like, you know, what would you be your takeaway from years living in an Eden area?
Oh, such a great question, mate. I mean, I think in one of the ways that you change as a person, and hopefully anyway, you know, one of the phrases that the Bible talks about is spending ourselves on behalf of the poor and the disadvantaged. And just that phrase of spending ourselves rings really true for me for my Eden days, and hopefully, you know, continues to be true. I think we do live in a culture that conditions us to be spending ourselves on behalf of our comfort, our convenience, ourselves, maybe our families. If we're gonna spend ourselves on something, make sure we get something in return, you know? That's kind of how culture conditions us. And that's because that's how you make money. You know, if you're in the marketing game, you need someone to kind of feel dissatisfied with what they've got, so they'll spend themselves to make themselves feel a bit better. That's how you sell products. And we live in that culture, don't we? But also, I guess there's human nature leads us towards that as well, you know, to spend ourselves on behalf of ourselves is kind of like our battle. And I think one of the things that Eden almost daily kind of chiseled away at was that idea, and just started hopefully to make, and the people I know who have been part of things like Eden, whether it's Eden or not, but you know, you see it in others, so hopefully you hope it's in you too, is, yeah, actually there's a bit more of the God who gave himself and considered, actually he loved people more than he loved himself and loved his own life, so he gave his life for the sake of others. And so if I'm a little bit more like that, if I'm a little bit more like the Jesus who spent himself entirely for the sake of others, then you know, maybe I'm getting closer to what I want to be. And Eden is a great place for Jesus just to do that in you and to do some of that spiritual formation in you. So I'm, yeah, that might be a takeaway in terms of how I change.
That's beautiful, mate. I really, really like that. And so, I mean, the call to join Eden is a big call, isn't it? And therefore the call to leave Eden and go do something else has got to almost be equally as big. So talk to me about, you know, How do you know when it was the right time to go and move on and create your own ministry? You know, what was going on in your mind, and how did you weigh all that up, and how did you know it was time?
Sure. That's such a great question. You know how people always say that? That's such a great question whilst they kind of try and think about what the answer might be. Politicians all the time do that. So when I, as I say, my role had shifted anyway. We were still living in Harbour Hay, but I was kind of overseeing that, those kind of mission department. And a couple of years earlier, some sort of major stuff had happened in my life. So my dad had been arrested for having indecent images of children on his computer. And that obviously just totally shook up our world as a family, my mum and sister and our wider family. And for me and Jen and our girls, it was completely life-changing thing that happened. And probably after a little while, after a couple of years of that, God, I think, began to just be at work in my life and in my heart around this issue of pornography. And I'd been involved in sort of ministry for all my adult life, really. I've kind of been working for churches and charities for all my life. And so if you do that, you definitely come across people who struggle with porn sometimes. You know, I've been involved in youth work. It had come up at different points. But I'd probably defined pornography up until then as that, you know, just one of those things, one of those many things that some people struggle with sometimes. And even when everything happened with my dad, because what we found out with my dad is that before he'd kind of, his behavior had escalated to what was illegal and abusive and those things, that actually for decades he'd been just consuming mainstream pornography that, you know, most of the nation would sort of just see as acceptable and normal. And we had no idea, you know, we had no idea. But even with my dad, I would still say, well, there was somebody, there was an individual who was struggling with something. But it's not something I'm about to, you know, leave my job to sort out. You know, it's not something I'm about to start a national campaign over, because it is just something that some people struggle with. Now, my dad got arrested in 2007. And in the same year, in 2007, Steve Jobs stood on a stage in California and lifted up his little rectangle that he had in his hand and said to the world, "This is the day that Apple will reinvent the phone." And 2007 was the year that the iPhone was launched. So fast forward a couple of years, God's starting to kind of prod me, provoke me, challenge me around this issue of pornography, because it had affected me personally. But he also started to help me see that this wasn't just my dad, you know, that I started to see how this new landscape that was being created by, first of all, broadband, and then smartphone technology, meant that something that had been around forever, you know, pornography had been around forever, was not the same as it was. It was like an old enemy with new weapons. It was just kind of hitting and changing society in a way we'd never seen before. And so all that was going on whilst I was still working at The Message. And eventually God, just started to ask me to pioneer something and a response to this. So The Message was beautiful. I kind of reduced some of my hours at The Message and started just to kind of do a few things around Naked Truth for a day a week. And then the more I did, the more I realized this is going to take more than a day a week. You know, this issue is huge. And so throughout that time was chatting with Andy together. We were praying and talking and we came to this point where it was just with a heavy heart to leave something I love, but also with a clear mandate from God that something needs to be done. Something needs to change. And nobody at that point that I could see, particularly in the UK, had begun to address this yet. And so I felt I had to be one of the people who did. And so that's kind of what happened, really.
Wow. Did it feel risky then, lifting your head above the parapet to take on an issue like that, which for many people has become deeply personalized and hidden and private? And then you stand up and start to say, we could do something about this. This is not right. This is not good. And shine a light on it. That must have been a real challenge, right?
Yeah, it was. And I think I knew quite early on that what I didn't particularly feel called to was to address some of the issues like child pornography that, you know, had been obviously what I'd been my dad's kind of thing. And I kind of, that was probably a little bit too painful maybe to go there. But I also understood that if my dad had got some support and help and had been able to find change and transformation a decade earlier, he never would have become that offender, you know, he would have never got to that point. So there was also a bit of a what's the upstream solution even to that issue of you know with my dad. And so I guess I knew I was going to be talking about something that was more mainstream. It was something I knew people were, you know, most people were dealing with in some shape or form. But I also had no idea what I was letting myself in for. I remember at the time of leaving, I was reading some stuff in the Bible. One of the things I remember reading was when Moses went to see, so Moses has had the burning bush experience and he goes and sees Jethro, his father-in-law, who he works for at the time. And kind of says, right, you know, Jethro, you're a father to me. It's amazing. But I do have this family in Egypt, you know, and I feel God's calling me to go and just sort some stuff out for my family over there. I'm sure I'll be back by time we need to be shearing these sheep. You know, I don't, there was a sense in Moses's kind of request to Jethro that this isn't going to be a big thing. I will be back. And I remember kind of saying something similar to Andy Hawthorne, where I'm just like, Andy, look, I'm just going to start doing some stuff around pornography because I feel it's God's, and I'm sure I'll be able to carry on at the message. And this isn't going to be a big thing. And so even from day one, I had no idea. I had no, by the time I was going full time, I probably had a bit more of an idea. But again, I don't think we understood the tsunami. I hate that sort of like the hyperbole that could be seen as, but actually I think it isn't, you know. I mean, just some statistics for you and why this is such an important issue. So in 2019, last year, one website had 44 billion hits in 1 year, in 12 months. Okay, so yeah. So just because that's such a big number, it's hard to understand, right? So, for example, iPlayer, lockdown, BBC iPlayer, the BBC were like going, yeah, it's been our biggest ever time where people have been going to iPlayer because they're in lockdown. And they got 23 million requests a day for the BBC iPlayer, right? This one website, the one with the 44 billion, 115 million a day. So it's just huge. Like Strictly last Saturday had 10 million viewers. Okay, so it's just to try and get your head around the fact that I think pretty much everyone I know seems to watch Strictly, and yet that's 10 million people. It's nobody, it's hardly anybody in comparison to 115 million people every day going to one porn site, just one. So that's when I kind of said I had no idea what I was getting into in terms of scale, in terms of how much porn is shifting. You know, that shift from the sex shop to the smartphone just was a game changer because people didn't have to pay for it anymore because they made money from the adverts. So suddenly porn's free. So suddenly people are accessing it who never did it before because they don't have to give any credit card details. They can just watch a few adverts and then they can also get their porn for free. Suddenly you can watch it on a phone anytime, anywhere. And so no one even needs to know, you know, that you're watching it. And you can be at work, you can be in your car, you can be wherever. And so all these things happened in what's been in the last, you know, 13 years. So it's yeah, I didn't realize how urgent this had become, how even when I started Naked Truth, I probably didn't have an understanding of how pornography was about to change everything. I mean, if you think about it this way, just again, for people to try and get their heads around it, in Manchester, we've got some, you know, adult stores and sex shops and stuff, and they are normally down sort of slightly dingy roads and hidden away, and they're boarded up, and you know, that's how it's been for a very long time. But if you would think about the internet as the new shiny city that everybody visits, which, think about Amazon, think about Netflix, you know, it's the place where everyone's actually doing their shopping and their entertainment is the internet, then, you know, these porn sites, they're not in little side streets anymore. They are like the giant kind of flagship stores. They're the kings. They are royalty of the internet because they have the thing that everybody on the internet wants, which is traffic. You know, that's, they are getting billions and billions of views every year. Then, you know, that's an advertiser's dream. That's what, so it's no longer fringe kind of like, oh, don't, you know, keep it quiet. We'll keep it pushed away on the side. And that's what's happened in our, you know, adulthood. That's happened. And so even people watching this now, maybe you hear the word porn and you think of magazines and you think of shops and you think, if you're of a certain generation, it's not that. It is not that. It has completely changed.
Mate, flipping heck. And so, I mean, that must feel like, in a sense, you're like trying to bail out a sinking ship with a teacup. You know, what does success look like for you? You know, you've got this ministry, trying to draw attention to the dangers and the pitfalls, trying to rescue people. But tell me, what would success look like for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this sounds cheesy. And, you know, it's been said so many different ways by different people. But I guess there is a daily success that we see. You know, we see lives, individual lives. So we work with, for example, users, men and women who struggle with porn use and want to find freedom from that, want to be set free from that. And we're working with those people and we're seeing that happen. You know, we're seeing decades of something that was crushing someone's spirit and relationships and self-esteem and everything else just kind of being taken out of the picture. You know, they have a future without porn. That's success. But we're also seeing, because we work with spouses, wives and husbands of users. And, you know, we're seeing marriages being saved and rescued. You know, like 96% of divorces cite obsessive porn use as a main factor in the breakdown of the relationship that led to divorce. Now, it's, yeah, that's huge too. So we see success every time we see, you know, and it doesn't always happen like this, but when we see, you know, a spouse or a partner find, you know, healing as well as the user find healing, when we see relationships restored, that's success. And, you know, when we're in the school and we see individuals, young people suddenly go, oh, okay, so this is lies then, right? I'm being lied to. I'm being told that this is normal and it's not normal because they don't know any better. And you see the penny drop and you see them start to wonder if there's something better, a better understanding of themselves and of other people that they can begin to have. That's success too. So yes, there's this kind of macro, we want to see, you know, a porn-free culture. And we, you know, who doesn't dream for that? But I think the reality for us is success is the lives. It's the lives being changed. And for me personally, because Visible is based on this idea of the mountain being removed so that Jesus is revealed. For me, some of the success is when we see the people who, when they deal with their porn problem, then discover there's actually someone else. So let me tell you a quick story about that, mate. So we... I've shared this at the message before, but one of the things we do is we do conferences for church leaders. Okay, so we do this thing called P Word, which just helps leaders create safe spaces to talk about and tackle pornography. And we kind of do that and gather leaders together. And we had one of those planned, and we were doing it in Cardiff. And we had a lady who was part of our Wholehearted, which is our partner program. So she was getting support and help and healing and stuff because of what happened in her marriage and her relationship. Her husband was getting recovery support as well. And neither of those were Christians. And we probably about 50% of the people on our programs aren't Christians. One of our team, Kat, she was saying, oh, I'm doing this conference thing, and she was just mentioning it to people. And she said, this lady called Fran, her name is, she said, can I go to that conference? So she's sitting in this group, it's a Zoom group thing. It's like a kind of, imagine like a 12-step type thing, just people come and share and support each other. But she's kind of like going, can I go to that conference thing? Now, Sam, when you think of an event that you want someone who doesn't know Jesus to attend for the first time, you might be thinking Alpha, that's a good choice. Maybe a message gig, that they're going to hear the gospel. It's going to be relevant to them. Porn conference for church leaders is lower on the seeker friendly kind of, evangelistic focused events. It was for church leaders, So Kat just sort of goes, sure, you can come. And they do. This couple come along to this event. And throughout the day, we're talking about, obviously pornography and practical tools and how to help leaders tackle this issue in their congregation. But we're also talking about the fact that, this is not a lot to do with sex. More often than not, this is to do with people's brokenness, the fact that, all our hearts and souls are restless until we find God, And so we seek satisfaction and solace and help in all sorts of places. And porn is just such an easy route for people. It's such a wide path for people. That's why people end up looking at porn. But actually, as G.K. Chesterton said, everyone who knocks on the door of a brothel is actually looking for God. There's this idea that actually so often behind this what seems like a sex thing on the surface is brokenness, coping mechanisms, self-soothing, but then behind that is kind of a search actually probably for intimacy with their father and with Jesus. And so we talked about some of that as well at this conference, more in the point of view, hey church, there's an opportunity here for us to reach our communities with answers to the questions they're asking. They're asking what's life all about, and they're expressing it through this thing. But we've got some answers to that through Jesus. So anyway, we're talking about that. And this lady, Fran, she turns to her friend and she says, she says, this Jesus stuff, how does that work then? Is there a course you have to join? Because I've joined courses before. And Kat and sort of like saying, well, let's talk about it at lunch. And so we had a chat with her and her husband, and they both sort of said, look, we realized that the thing that, her husband's like, I've been a sex addict, a porn addict. I realized it was God. That's the thing that was, I've been looking in the wrong place. I mean, it all sounds, it's familiar words, but when it comes out of the mouth of somebody who hasn't heard loads of sermons where people say that stuff, they're just saying this is their authentic understanding of what's happened in their life. And you say, okay, you can meet Jesus now. So, that happens, which is great. And they make this commitment, prayer of commitment. They start their journey of discipleship. They're actually now on our team because they're both trained counselors. So they actually lead groups for us and do stuff years later, going so well in their relationship with God. But wow. there's this amazing thing there, isn't there? It's like, where did you become a Christian then? Oh yeah, a porn conference. It's just I'm waiting to hear them do that in their testimony. But actually for us, that's an example. And we're seeing that more and more now. We're seeing people who are coming for specialist support over a specific issue. But what actually they're finding is there's other Christians who are dealing with that too. And so as that happens, they start to actually have really strong relationships with Christians. And so then naturally and organically, Christians start sharing about, you know, I've been praying, or I'm leaning on God, or I've been, you know, that's been part of their recovery. Yeah. And someone's going, well, I haven't got that. So it's not only what was the cause, what was the brokenness that can be healed, but also it's just that Jesus is the one who brings help now, and that's what you're looking for now. So it's just been beautiful to see that, and that's success too.
Love it, mate. So good. I didn't realize they'd gone on to working with you. That's just incredible.
Yeah.
I've got so many questions. Yeah. So little time. So quick fire. Jesus said, the poor you will always have. Do you think the statement, porn you will always have, is a thing? You know, you mentioned a porn-free world. Is that a dream you have?
Oh, mate. So interesting. I mean, you hear the stories of revivals, don't you, where people stop, you know, pubs get emptied and donkeys don't know what to do because no one's swearing at them anymore and all that stuff. We've heard those tales. And so I guess when you read the revival stories, you go, actually, a complete change in culture has happened before, where the kind of, you know, the vices that were just normalized and accepted suddenly become like, why would I do that? You know, for the majority of people. But I guess even in those heady days, there were still some people who were maybe having a drink and getting drunk or were swearing at their donkey. So in down the pit. So, you know, completely porn free. Is that possible? Probably not, because I think, you know, throughout our human history, we've just seen that the abuse of sex, but also of people, that is often central to porn. You know, the exploitation, the consumption, the dehumanization of people that is just prevalent and prevails through porn. You know, it seems to be so rooted into our brokenness as humans that I suspect there'll always be some kind of outworking of that kind of selfish consumption of people for my own gain. But could community and culture be transformed so significantly that that's just not seen as okay anymore, that's seen as something that you know, the few are doing rather than the masses? Yeah, I think that's possible. And particularly if revival comes, I think, you know, we'll be looking at culture so differently. But I think, revival has to be about the kind of cultural transformation as well as the transformation of the heart. They go hand in hand, don't they? And sometimes the behavior changes and then people believe, and sometimes they believe and the behavior changes, and you know, we've seen that worked out in so many ways. And I guess revival's the same. You know, as we're praying for people to discover Jesus, what happens is, yeah, maybe hands go up at events and people have enlightenment moments and they meet Jesus in lots of ways. And then what you pray and hope for is they become disciples that start to change their communities around them. And so then, yeah, we start to see if community change and culture change isn't the goal, then we're shooting short of what revival is, because we want people to be saved in terms of them entering relationship with Jesus. But the obvious making of disciples thing, which obviously the message is so passionate about, one of the outworkings of that is that culture then changes, because that's what disciples do. They change culture.
Yeah, that's lovely. Amazing. Brilliant. I was just thinking, just to draw us to a close, you know, when I was a lad and someone with a prophetic gift turned up at church, I wouldn't be able to look him in the eye just in case he prophesied about the state of my heart or the state of my sin life. But I imagine when you turn up at a church, that's a whole new level of people that want to catch your eye just in case you, you've got a gift to spot a porn.
Yeah.
That leads me on, I suppose, to completely segue, but kind of related. How do you fund this thing when people might struggle to identify themselves with a ministry, wouldn't want to see it going out of their bank account because it's a reminder of something that they'd rather not address? How could people even watching this today back you and support you in your ministry? Land it for us, Ian.
Okay, let me say two things based on that, because I want to speak to the first thing you said. And I think just that, you know, if someone feels sitting there scared that, you know, the prophet's going to say, I see lust written on your forehead, you know, in flames of fire, then the reality is that at least 50% of the people in that church are sitting there panicking about that. Okay. You know, the stats are that if you're worried about that, you're not alone actually in your congregation. And so actually we just need to get better at being vulnerable and saying, do you know what? I struggle. And one of the things that if someone watching this, so statistically, therefore, someone watching this might be going, well, actually, that is me. You've been talking about porn. So how do I get help? And you know, I'm not going to write that in the comments right now. So where do I go to get help? Then, I mean, there obviously are lots of places and people, but for us, a starting point is our Click to Kick groups. So it's just visit our website and you'll find that there are places you can get help. Some that no one would even know because it's something you can just download and read, or a book you can buy and it'll be on your Kindle and no one will ever know. Or probably more helpfully, there are people who can walk with you in a group context who can actually take you to a place of freedom. And I guess in terms of how the people support and fund or whatever, answering that question, I think the cheeky part of me would say, well, if you're giving money, it will say Visible Ministries. So nobody would necessarily think it was a porn thing. So, you know, just bear that in mind. Your bank statement won't look too dodgy. But also, I think we want people to join us in all sorts of ways. You know, we want to train people who can lead some of those small groups, because the more people we've got leading those groups, the more groups they'll be running. We want people who will help communicate you know, in schools and stuff like that. So we've got a program of where we train people and support people. And so if the idea of giving money feels a bit scary, you know, then that's even more scary, right? You know, go and volunteer for the porn charity. But I know there will be people watching this, because if they're still watching, because, you know, I've watched YouTube things, the whole retention thing on a video is all what it's all about. So if you're still watching now, then chances are you're watching because you care about this issue. It's personal to you, or it's somebody in your family or life. And so if you're still watching now, actually, chances are you're exactly the sort of person who we'd love to connect with, because we could maybe train you to help others, or we can point you in the right direction. If you want to give financially or pray for us, then we'll do that too. So the best thing is probably to go to the Naked Truth website, and there's a kind of tab, you know, join us or join in, and that'll show people where to go and what to do.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Ian. Thank you for sharing your life. Thank you for sharing the journey of your ministry. Thank you for all that wisdom that you've ram-packed into this session today. We are so grateful that you've joined us. And I'm just so grateful for you and all that you
me too, mate.
For me. So
Ditto.
Thanks for joining us.
Bless you, buddy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, why not share it with a friend? And don't forget to check out all the great programs we're producing for Message Live on YouTube, Facebook, or at message.org.uk/live.